Chapter 2. Abound in learning and wit, but to fix upon particulars is a task too slippery for my slender abilities. If I should venture, in a windy day, to affirm to your highness that there is a large cloud near the horizon in the form of a bear, another in the zenith with the head of an ass, a third to the westward with claws like a dragon, and your highness should in a few minutes think fit to examine the truth, it is certain they would be all chanced in figure and position, new ones would arise, and all we could agree upon would be, that clouds there were, but that I was grossly mistaken in the zoography and topography of them. But your governor, perhaps, may still insist, and put the question, what has then become of those immense bales of paper which must needs have been employed in such numbers of books? Can these also be wholly annihilated, and too of a sudden, as I pretend? What shall I say in return of so invidious an objection? It ill befits the distance between your highness and me to send you for ocular conviction to a jakes or an oven, to the windows of a body house, or to a sordid lanthorn. Books, like men their authors, have no more than one way of coming into the world, but there are 10,000, to go out of it, and return no more. I profess to your highness, in the integrity of my heart, that what I am going to say, is literally true this minute I am writing. What revolutions may happen before it shall be ready for your perusal I can by no means warrant. However, I beg you to accept it as a specimen of our learning, our politeness, and our wit. I do therefore affirm, upon the word of a sincere man, that there is now actually in being a certain poet called John Dryden, whose translation of Virgil was lately printed in large folio, well bound, and if diligent search were made, for aught I know, is yet to be seen. There is another called Nahum Tate, who is ready to make oath, that he has caused many reams of verse to be published, whereof both himself and his bookseller, if lawfully required, can still produce authentic copies, and therefore wonders why the world is pleased to make such a secret of it. There is a third, known by the name of Tom Durfee, a poet of a vast comprehension, an universal genius, and most profound learning. There are also one Mr. Rymer and one Mr. Dennis, most profound critics. There is a person styled Dr. Bentley, who has wrote near 1,000 pages of immense erudition, giving a full and true account of a certain squabble of wonderful importance between himself and a bookseller. He is a writer of infinite wit and humor. No man rallies with a better grace and in more sprightly terms. Further, I avow to your highness, that with these eyes I have beheld the person of William Wotton, B.D.D., who has written a good-sized volume against a friend of your governor, from whom, alas, he must therefore look for little favor, in a most gentlemanly style, adorned with utmost politeness and civility, replete with discoveries equally valuable for their novelty and use, and embellished with traits of wit so poignant and so apposite, that he is a worthy yoke-mate to his forementioned friend. Why should I go upon farther particulars, which might fill a volume with the just eulogies of my contemporary brethren? I shall bequeath this piece of justice to a larger work, wherein I intend to write a character of the present set of wits in our nation. Their persons I shall describe particularly and at length, their genius and understandings in miniature. In the meantime, I do here make bold to present your highness with a faithful abstract drawn from the universal body of all arts and sciences, intended wholly for your service and instruction. Nor do I doubt in the least, but your highness will peruse it as carefully, and make as considerable improvements as other young princes have already done by the many volumes of late years written for a help to their studies. That your highness may advance in wisdom and virtue, as well as years, and at last outshine all your royal ancestors, shall be the daily prayer of, Sir, your highness's most devoted, Anne C. Desham, 1697. The Preface. The wits of the present age being so very numerous and penetrating, it seems the grandees of church and state begin to fall under horrible apprehensions lest these gentlemen, during the intervals of a long peace, should find leisure to pick holes in the weak sides of religion and government. To prevent which, there has been much thought employed of late upon certain projects for taking off the force and edge of those formidable inquirers from canvassing and reasoning upon such delicate points. They have at length fixed upon one, which will require some time as well as cost to perfect. Meanwhile, the danger hourly increasing, by new levies of wits, all appointed, as there is reason to fear, with pen, ink, and paper, which may at an hour's warning be drawn out into pamphlets, and other offensive weapons ready for immediate execution, it was judged of absolute necessity that some present expedient be thought until the main design can be brought to maturity. To this end, at a grand committee, some days ago, this important discovery was made by a certain curious and refined observer, that seamen have a custom, when they meet a whale, to fling him out an empty tub, by way of amusement, to divert him from laying violent hands upon the ship. This parable was immediately mythologized. The whale was interpreted to be Hobbes' Leviathan, which tosses and plays with all other schemes of religion and government, whereof a great many are hollow, and dry, and empty, and noisy, and wooden, and given to rotation. This is the Leviathan from whence the terrible wits of our age are said to borrow their weapons. The ship in danger is easily understood to be its old antitype, the Commonwealth. But how to analyze the tub was a matter of difficulty, when, after long inquiry and debate, the literal meaning was preserved, and it was decreed that, in order to prevent these leviathans from tossing and sporting with the Commonwealth, which of itself is too apt to fluctuate, they should be diverted from that game by tale of a tub. And my genius being conceived to lie not unhappily that way, I had the honor done me to be engaged in the performance. This is the sole design in publishing the following treatise, which I hope will serve for an interim of some months, to employ those unquiet spirits till the perfecting of that great work, into the secret of which it is reasonable the courteous reader should have some little light. It is intended that a large academy be erected, capable of containing 9,743 persons, which, by modest computation, is reckoned to be pretty near the current number of wits in this island, 50. These are to be disposed into the several schools of this academy, and there pursue those studies to which their genius most inclines them. The undertaker himself will publish his proposals with all convenient speed, to which I shall refer the curious reader for a more particular account, mentioning at present only a few of the principal schools. There is, first, a large pederastic school, with French and Italian masters. There is also the spelling school, a very spacious building, the school of looking glasses, the school of swearing, the school of critics, the school of salivation, the school of hobby horses, the school of poetry, the school of tops, the school of spleen, the school of gaming, with many others too tedious to recount. No person to be admitted member into any of these schools without an attestation under two sufficient persons' hands certifying him to be a wit. But to return, I am sufficiently instructed in the principal duty of a preface if my genius were capable of arriving at it. Thrice have I forced my imagination to take the tour of my invention, and thrice it has returned empty, the latter having been wholly drained by the following treatise. Not so my more successful brethren the moderns, who will by no means let slip a preface or dedication without some notable distinguishing stroke to surprise the reader at the entry, and kindle a wonderful expectation of what is to ensue. Such was that of a most ingenious poet, who, soliciting his brain for something new, compared himself to the hangman and his patron to the patient. This was Ensign Resens, Indictum Aurelio 51, when I went through that necessary and noble course of study, 51b, I had the happiness to to observe many such egregious touches, which I shall not injure the authors by transplanting, because I have remarked that nothing is so very tender as a modern piece of wit, and which is apt to suffer so much in the carriage. Some things are extremely witty today, or fasting, or in this place, or at 8 o'clock, or over a bottle, or spoke by Mr. Waddycombe, or in the summer's morning, any of which, by the smallest transposal or misapplication, is utterly annihilated. Thus wit has its walks and purlieus, out of which it may not stray the breadth of a hair, upon peril of being lost. The moderns have artfully fixed this mercury, and reduced it to the circumstances of time, place, and person. Such a jest there is that will not pass out of Covent Garden, and such a one, that is nowhere intelligible, but at Hyde Park Corner. Now, though it sometimes tenderly affects me to consider that all the towardly passages I shall deliver in the following treatise will grow quite out of date and relish with the first shifting of the present scene, yet I must needs subscribe to the justice of this proceeding, because I cannot imagine why we should be at expense to furnish wit for succeeding ages, when the former have made no sort of provision for ours. Wherein I speak the sentiment of the very newest, and consequently the most orthodox refiners, as well as my own. However, being extremely solicitous, that every accomplished person who has got into the taste of wit calculated for this present month of August 1697 should descend to the very bottom of all the sublime throughout this treatise, I hold it fit to lay down this general maxim. Whatever reader desires to have a thorough comprehension of an author's thoughts, cannot take a better method than by putting himself into the circumstances and posture of life that the writer was in upon every important passage as it flowed from his pen, for this will introduce a parity and strict correspondence of ideas between the reader and the author. Now, to assist the diligent reader in so delicate an affair as far as brevity will permit, I have recollected that the shrewdest pieces of this treatise were conceived in bed in a garret. At other times, for a reason best known to myself, I thought fit to sharpen my invention with hunger, and in general the whole work was begun, continued, and ended under a long course of physic and a great want of money. Now, I do affirm it will be absolutely impossible for the candid peruser to go along with me in a great many bright passages, unless upon the several difficulties emergent he will please to capacitate and prepare himself by these directions. And this I lay down as my principal postulatum. Because I have professed to be a most devoted servant of all modern forms, I apprehend some curious wit may object against me for proceeding thus far in a preface without declaiming, according to custom, against the multitude of writers whereof the whole multitude of writers most reasonably complain. I am just come from perusing some hundreds of prefaces, wherein the authors do at the very beginning address the gentle reader concerning this enormous grievance. Of these I have preserved a few examples, and shall set them down, as near as my memory has been able to retain them. One begins thus. Or a man to set up for a writer, when the press swarms with, and see, another. He tax upon paper does not lessen the number of scribblers who daily pester, and see, another. Pen every little would-be wit takes pen in hand, 'tis in vain to enter the lists, and see, another. Oh, observe what trash the press swarms with, and see, another. It is merely in obedience to your commands that I venture into the public, for who upon a less consideration would be of a party with such a rabble of scribblers? And see, now, I have two words in my own defense against this objection. First, I am far from granting the number of writers a nuisance to our nation, having strenuously maintained the contrary in several parts of the following discourse. Secondly, I do not well understand the justice of this proceeding, because I observe many of these polite prefaces to be not only from the same hand, but from those who are most voluminous in their several productions, upon which I shall tell the reader a short tale. A mountebank in Leicester Fields had drawn a huge assembly about him. Among the rest, a fat unwieldy fellow, half stifled in the press, would be every fit crying out, "Lord, what a filthy crowd is here! Pray, good people, give way a little. Bless need what a devil has raked this rabble together. ZDS, what squeezing is this? Honest friend, remove your elbow." At last a weaver that stood next him could hold no longer. "Plague confound you," said he, "for an overgrown sloven, and who in the devil's name, I wonder, helps to make up the crowd half so much as yourself? Don't you consider that you take up more room with that carcass than any five here? Is not the place as free for us as for you? Bring your own guts to a reasonable compass, and then I'll engage we shall have room enough for us all. There are certain common privileges of a writer, the benefit whereof I hope there will be no reason to doubt, particularly, that where I am not understood, it shall be concluded that something very useful and profound is couched underneath, and again, that whatever word or sentence is printed in a different character shall be judged to contain something extraordinary either of wit or sublime. As for the liberty I have thought fit to take of praising myself, upon some occasions or none, I am sure it will need no excuse, if a multitude of great examples be allowed sufficient authority. For it is here to be noted, that praise was originally a pension paid by the world, but the moderns, finding the trouble and charge too great in collecting it, have lately bought out the fee simple, since which time the right of presentation is wholly in ourselves. For this reason it is that, when an author makes his own eulogy, he uses a certain form, to declare and insist upon his title, which is commonly in these or the like words, "I speak without vanity," which I think plainly shows it to be a matter of right and justice. Now, I do here once for all declare, that in every encounter of this nature through the following treatise the form aforesaid is implied, which I mention to save the trouble of repeating it on so many occasions. It is a great ease to my conscience, that I have written so elaborate and useful a discourse without one grain of satire intermixed, which is the sole point wherein I have taken leave to dissent from the famous originals of our age and country. I have observed some satirists, to use the public much at the rate that pedants do a naughty boy ready horsed for discipline, first expostulate the case, then plead the necessity of the rod from great provocations, and conclude every period with a lash. Now, if I know anything of mankind, these gentlemen might very well spare their reproof and correction, for there is not through all nature another, so callous and insensible a member as the world's posteriors, whether you apply to it the toe or the birch. Besides, most of our late satirists seem to lie under a sort of mistake, that because nettles have the prerogative to sting, therefore all other weeds must do so too. I make not this comparison out of the least design to detract from these worthy writers, for it is well known among mythologists that weeds have the preeminence over all other vegetables, and therefore the first monarch of this island whose taste and judgment were so acute and refined, did very wisely root out the roses from the collar of the order, and plant the thistles in their stead, as the nobler flower of the two. For which reason it is conjectured by profounder antiquaries, that the satirical itch, so prevalent in this part of our island, was first brought among us from beyond the Tweed. Here may it long flourish and abound. May it survive, and neglect the scorn of the world with as much ease and contempt as the world is insensible to the lashes of it. May their own dullness, or that of their party, be no discouragement for the authors to proceed. But let them remember it is with wits as with razors, which are never so apt to cut those they are employed on as when they have lost their edge. Besides, those whose teeth are too rotten to bite, are best of all others qualified to revenge that defect with their breath. I am not, like other men, to envy or undervalue the talents I cannot reach, for which reason I must needs bear a true honor to this large eminent sect of our British writers. And I hope this little panegyric will not be offensive to their ears, since it has the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.